CliffCentral.com.
All right, it is a Wednesday morning, CliffCentral.com, just after 7 o'clock, and we are joined by Mutale Mwanza, who is the queen of Zambian media. That's what we're calling her this morning, and she seems to already have been the most sparkly and bright human being in the world for this this very chilly Wednesday morning. So, Mutale, and Simpiwe is obviously with us too.
Yes.
And we want to hear from you in the comments this morning. Lots of people very pleased that George joined in. Suddenly they're saying, what's up, Borge? Thanks for joining us in the comments section. We will see you on Friday, and he will be back on Friday. Tomorrow, of course, is a public holiday in South Africa, so it's like a mini Friday today. So we're even more excited to be able to do the show this morning with you, Mutale. Listen, it would be remiss of us to not learn something about Zambia while we're here with you this morning. So I want you to tell us a little bit about the languages. Tell us a little bit about what currency you guys use. Tell us a bit about, you know, the stuff that goes on in the country that makes Zambia different to other countries, and there are many people who may want to go there on holiday. There are people who want to visit there, people who want to start businesses there. What can you tell us?
Wow. First of all, what can I tell you about Zambia? The first thing that comes to mind is the friendly people. Zambians, you know, we are friendly people. Mm-hmm. We are helpful. We're bubbly. we're a country that's very peaceful. If you look at our history and, you know, all the way, I mean, fast forward to today, we're one of the most peaceful countries on the continent, I can assure you.
That's true.
And it's just beautiful.
So a lot of people don't know.
It's amazing to be in Zambia.
What are the main languages?
You know, land at the airports and, pardon me?
What are the main languages that people speak in Zambia?
Ah, the main languages, we speak English and we speak Bemba and Nyanja.
So tell me about Bemba.
So those are some of them. And Bemba, yes. Do you want me to teach you something?
Definitely.
Yes, please.
Let's go.
Okay, cool. Let's start with the easiest, which is good morning, mm-hmm. right? So if you want to say good morning in Bemba, you say Mwashibukeni.
Mwashibukeni.
Mwa. So say Mwashibukeni.
Mwashibukeni. Mwashibukeni.
Mwashibukeni.
All right, that's lovely. That flows.
And that's good morning.
Nicely. All right, cool.
That's good morning. Mwashibukeni.
How do I say it's?
So Gareth, give me a word that you want me to teach you in Bemba.
How do I say it's fucking cold?
Unfortunately, we do not have the F word.
Oh, okay. Just as well. Decent people in Zambia, like I said
earlier.
Yeah.
However, if you do want to say it's very cold, you can say nakutalala sana.
Nakutalala sana.
Nakutalala sana.
Okay. Nakutalala sana.
Nakutalala sana. All right,
okay.
I like it.
Very cold.
All right, so what is the...
Do you guys...
Yeah, go ahead, Simpiwe.
Do you guys also have like overlapping words? I mean, because this side we have like Tswana and Sotho, and someone can say Kilabil. And depending if you use Tswana, it could mean, oh, Tswana or Sotho. The one can be hungry or the one can be tired. So do you guys also have that?
Yes, we do have that. Though I would really want to give an example, though it's going to be a little bit vulgar.
Go ahead.
But I'm going to say it anyway.
We're not scared.
That shouldn't stop you, girl.
Go for it.
Don't worry about us.
Don't worry about that.
Okay, cool. Uncensored on radio. Let's go. So you could say, Lord, I need to get the pronunciation right. If somebody says, like kunyenga wenye, right? That means you're telling lies, or you're lying to me.
Right.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
You're lying to me. But it could also mean something of a sexual connotation. Kunyenga, like having sex, sexual intercourse. Mm. So we do have those overlapping words. But one thing that bugs me about Bemba, right, is the fact that I think the people that you know, made the language. You know, the people that really thought about this language were very lazy or either just really bored on that day, because there are certain words that you can use. Like, you can actually use the same word, and it can mean different things based on how you pronounce it. Do you have that there in essay as well?
Well, I'm even thinking about English, and if you think of the word there, like, it can be over there, it can be there as in belongs to them, or it can be it could even mean like a directional thing.
They are.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Those are the three main derivations of that word, and it sounds the same. So if you say there without giving it a context, it could be any one of those three things, and it could be very confusing for people who don't speak the language. So is that what you're talking about with Bemba as well?
Absolutely. So I'll give you this word. It's called pata, right? P-A-T-A.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. So if you want to say, for instance, what you're wearing is, it doesn't fit you, that's a small size, you could say, if yo fuele nafi pata or naka pata. Mm-hmm. Right?
All right.
Okay.
To mean that is not your size, it's a small piece of clothing, naipata. But you could actually use the same word to mean a person hates you, like, oh, I will hate you, nala kupata. You know?
It sounds exactly the same. Oh, okay. So how can you tell if someone
it's the same word.
They don't like your outfit, or they completely hate you.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
And
that's
then
very confusing.
The worst part is you could also use the same word to say, okay, so you know flip-flops?
Uh-huh.
You know, mm-hmm. flip-flops?
Yes.
They're called pata-pata.
Ah, pata pata.
Love this.
Yes.
Sure.
Pata pata. And then you could also use the same word to say na pa pata, which is please. Like na pa pata.
Oh.
So it's like na la ku pata.
Wow.
Na
okay.
Pata.
So you pata, pata. Again,
na pa pata.
So either you're saying like this thing is too small for you, you're too big for your outfit, or you're saying I hate you. Or you're saying, give me my flip-flops. Or you're saying, please.
Yes.
It's a lot of there's a huge difference, and it sounds the same to me.
Exactly. Like, how do they just use the word pata to mean all these things? Nala kupata. I will hate you, or I hate you. The outfit you're wearing, naka pata. Napa pata. Please. It's like...
Someone wants to say here, Silicide says, that is true. Zambians are really friendly and helpful. I remember a few years ago, I was going through Zambia and my car broke down in the middle there of nowhere, and a guy offered us tea in the morning while we were waiting for spares. Okay, so you're not making that up. That's
so
very
nice.
That is nice. What are the main reasons that visit Zambia? Why would people want to visit Zambia? It is obviously a beautiful country. We've got the Victoria Falls there.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of natural beauty. There are some very unspoiled parts of the country. But they're also, I mean, Lusaka is a busy place, right? There's a lot going on in Lusaka. It's a proper city on a large scale. There are lots of business opportunities there. There are also beautiful farms in Zambia. What do we not know about your country? You're the ambassador now.
Oh, what do you not know about? Mm. Okay. As my country, Zambia is beautiful. We call it Zambia in the sun. So you need to come and explore Zambia. I'll give you an example of where I am right now. I am in Zarenje, right? And there's this amazing water body. It's called Kundalila. I know that a lot of people love the Victoria Falls. And I do understand that it's one of the wonders of the world. But there's so much more to see in Zambia. So in Serengeti district, if you travel here, you will find this beautiful water body called Kundalila.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, taking pictures there from Sunday. It's so beautiful. It's a definite must see. There's also other water bodies, other waterfalls. Like in Northern Province, you've got the Chishimba Falls. Zambia has got quite a number of waterfalls. Pardon?
I want to show people a picture of these Kundalina Falls that you're talking about now. This is beautiful. Let me just put it up on...
Yeah, please do. Please.
I've got a picture of it right here. And this is where you are at the moment. You're doing a tourism thing at the moment. So this is perfect.
Yes.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yes.
Look at that. Isn't that pretty?
Yes.
Oh,
that's magnificent. It looks like
that is gorgeous.
It looks like something out of a movie.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a river called the Kaombe River, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a river, and then, you know, it just falls onto the, you know, the waterfall. It's basically on the lip of the Muchinga Escarpment.
Right.
It's in a small town called Kanona in Serenje. It's absolutely amazing. It's a beauty. And you know what the thing is? This place has got no crocs.
Good.
Absolutely no crocodiles. All Good. You need to do is come out here. You can, you can have a picnic. You can set up like a nice picnic. You can have a braai. There are no crocodiles. You don't have to be afraid of that. You can see the waterfalls from the top, but you can go down the, there's like a stairway that's been created, right? Mm-hmm. By the National Heritage. There's a stairway that you can take going all the way down, and you can experience the waterfall from the bottom. They actually say that the water has medicinal, like, you know, properties and things like that. So you can actually take a bath just below. You can swim, and you can do like so many amazing things. It's beautiful. This is one of the most peaceful places I have been to. There's no animals. There's no crocs. Nothing to be afraid of. Just grab your bikini,
nice.
Grab your braai stand, cool drinks, and have fun. It's beautiful.
So, all right.
Peaceful.
A few questions here. So Brown Earth TP Venue says, morning, guys. Mutale is amazing. Where can I follow her? So give us your socials so that we can put those on the screen.
Awesome. So you can follow me on Instagram. My social media is Mutale Mwanza Media, one
okay.
word.
All right.
Yeah. Yes. And on Facebook, it's Mutale Mwanza.
All right. Very good.
Twitter is at Mutale.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, I'm so bummed out that my accounts are not verified. So please do go to the accounts with the most followers. On Facebook, sure. I have about 339,000 followers. On Instagram, 302K. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go to the ones with the most followers because
that's very good.
Like people doing their things. I don't know why Zuckerberg won't verify my accounts. And then people asking me to pay for verification. I won't do it. Gareth, would you do something
no,
like
wait,
that?
No,
like,
you pay for verification?
Yes, people have been approaching me, and I'm like, I'm not paying $2,000 or $3,000 to have my account verified.
Don't do it.
That's unacceptable.
It's probably a scam anyway. I don't think
that sounds like a scam.
I don't think they can do that. I really don't think that's possible. So don't fall
exactly.
for it. No. All right. So we got a couple of other comments here. So George wants to know, George Meany, who was on just a moment ago. He says, how are the roads in Zambia? Can you drive there and back? What's the traffic like? And that's a good question, because if people are going to take a road trip, is it worth going?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely worth going. And let me tell you, you can actually drive from South Africa to Zambia and drive from Zambia to South Africa. You can drive from Zambia to Namibia. You can drive from Zambia to Botswana. Do you guys know the Kazungula Bridge?
I've heard of
George,
it.
George, you need to Google the Kazungula Bridge. Yeah, you need to Google that. Gareth, if you can actually even put it up on the screen so that, you know, George can know what I'm talking about. There's a bridge that's been built that has so much economic value between countries, or should I say among countries, all right? So you can actually drive between Zambia, wow. Zimbabwe, South Africa, and within the country itself, the road network is very good. You should also see the infrastructure development. I'm actually proud to say that. It's greatly improved over the years, and there are certain places, obviously, that we don't have things, you know, all together like 100%.
Sure.
But most of the roads in Zambia are amazing.
All right,
and you can take a road trip, you will have fun, and the roads are great.
I got to show you a picture of these,
I think also, George, since he's an EV driver, he would also want to know, do you guys have electric vehicle stations? Because that's what he drives. That's what George Nini drives.
George, not yet. Not okay. yet. Not yet.
So take a look. Here is this,
not just yet, George. We're definitely getting there.
I want to show you this Kazungula Bridge, because this is a very impressive looking bridge. Does that go over the Zambezi River?
This is a beautiful bridge, Gareth. Mm. It's the Zambezi River.
Magnificent.
Yes,
and that absolutely is, beautiful.
And that is open now. That's the way into Zambia, right?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes,
it's
such a beautiful bridge. It's amazing. Actually between the countries. It's Zambia and Botswana.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's yes. really.
This
needs
to be like part of the seven
you
wonders.
You guys need to come.
Honestly.
It was opened last year in 2021 around May.
Well, yeah,
they definitely need to put it under the Seven Wonders.
Pardon?
No, I'm saying they definitely need to put it under the.
One second. Damn it! Don't know what happened there. Sorry, I don't know what happened.
Between Botswana and Zambia, and it's beautiful.
Sign me up. I think this is going to be my next travel destination, honestly. Yeah. Like when I start traveling and going out and about into Africa, this is going to be one of the first few places I go to because you have sold it for me.
Is it expensive?
Let me also tell
you. Is it expensive there, Mutale? I mean, does it cost you an arm and a leg to buy things in Zambia? Are there nice places to stay? You know, what's the food like? People want to know this stuff, especially for those of us who've never been.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm happy to tell you. So staying in Zambia is not going to cost you much. You have decent accommodation. If you love camping, we do have a lot of backpackers. Mm-hmm. If you love like your upmarket, just in a classy accommodation, we've got quite a number of lodges and hotels for that. If you love your luxurious traveling, depending on which town or place you want to go to, we also do have that. If you come to Lusaka, without advertising too much for for hotels and lodges, there's quite a number of beautiful places you can stay. We do have the Sarova Hotel. We've got Pomozi Intercontinental. We've got the Radisson as well. My goodness, there's so many. If you want to be in a place where you want to, lodge in an area with, animals, we do have Chaminuka. Chaminuka Lodge is amazing. Gareth, Spirit, have you ever experienced like a cheetah walk? Have you ever been in a park or having a game drive and you can actually have two cheetahs, tied to a leash and you're actually walking with two cheetahs side by side?
I think Simpiro.
You never experienced that?
I've been to a game drive, but the two cheetahs, honey, that sounds like I'm trying to die quick and in a hurry. Why am I doing that?
Simpiro is already nervous. No, she doesn't like that.
Let me mobilize the resources not only for you to experience the witchcraft in Luapula, but also for you to do the cheetah walk at Chaminuka. It's amazing. You can actually do the Naomi Campbell strut with two cheetahs when you visit Chaminuka Lodge. It's
amazing.
Gareth, don't laugh. It's a real thing.
No, I got you. I believe you. It's just, it sounds incredible.
Gareth, let me ask you to pull out something real quick. What's his name? The guy from Power, Ro Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know Ro Timmy?
Yeah.
He sings. He's in Power. Yes. 50 Cent series, Power.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ro Timmy was recently in the country. Please go to his Instagram quickly and just scroll. He was in Zambia with Bobby Valentino, right? And they went to Chaminuka. Wow. You're going to see Ro Timmy with the cheetahs doing the things. You're going to see him. I promise.
Wow. Oh, no.
That sounds
unbelievable.
You will find it. That is Zambia. We call it Zambia in the sun. That is Zambia, the real Africa. Tourism on point. The food is amazing. The wildlife, the game viewing is amazing. We have so many, species that you can't even find in other places. Like the white rhino. Like where are you going to find a white rhino? You can find that in Livingston in Zambia. The food is great. Caterpillars, we call them finkubala. You need to try that delicacy where we fry caterpillars.
Wait, we eat caterpillars.
Some chili and some onion.
Now you're going.
I have a question for you. Did you? did you ever try Mopani worms when you're in South Africa?
Those are the ones. We call them Ifinkubala.
Okay. I'm not a fan of those. So.
I found this picture of these people sitting with these three cheetahs and they obviously they're tied to a leash and you can basically walk with these cheetahs. That's phenomenal. My God. Couldn't find the actual picture you were looking for, but that's all I found. Listen, this has been amazing. It's so good to talk to you and great to meet you. And we've got to have you on the show again at some point.
Thank you. I can't wait to come back. Thank you so much for having me.
And keep us informed of your travels on social media. You can follow Mutale and all of her adventures. Just go along to at Mutale Mwanza on Twitter, on Instagram at Mutale Mwanza Media, and you can find her by following the most followed accounts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. So lots of good reasons to follow you. It's really good to have you on. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Mutale. Bye. Nice to see you. Thank you so much. Wow. Well, that was really cool. You know what? We learned a lot, and I just think you can either bring someone on and you could talk about all kinds of local nonsense, or you can let them talk about their own brilliant place that they live in and come from. And we learned a huge amount today. I mean, I found this fascinating. This is why we try to do the show with new people as often as we can, and especially people who are already like well-known media stars like Mutale, because they know what they're talking about. They can make sense of it for the rest of us. So Simpiwe, you're going to be excited because what we're doing next is something that you do in your spare time. You love these real true crime things. I'm sure you followed the whole...
Sign me up.
Oh, yeah. You followed the whole Devil's Dorp thing and on the Devil's Trail, that you know, that show. There's a book which Ben Boyson has written called On the Devil's Trail, How I Hunted Down the Krugersdorp Killers. We will speak to Ben Blixam Boyson just now. Ben is South Africa's Chuck Norris, and he's also someone who knows a huge amount about investigating all of these dangerous killers. He's going to be joining us in just a second. We're also going to talk about what the police do right and what they do wrong, because Ben has some interesting points of view, and he goes into some of these in his book too. So let's just give you a bit of background. He's been an incredible mind in South Africa's investigative force. He had a 40-year career in the South African police force. He achieved overnight fame as the good guy in the TV hit series Devil's Dorp, which of course we know was not only a massive hit here in South Africa, but internationally too. He managed to pin down and arrest the infamous Krugersdorp killers. He's driven by the idea of justice. It took him 3 years of relentless searching and sleuthing to get Cecilia Steyn, that very, very scary woman who was the main brains behind the Krugersdorp killings, and it took him 3 years to get her behind bars. Now, he has fought all kinds of things here, including police botches. He took on the Krugersdorp killers case back in 2016, and the state had failed to arrest those responsible for the killing spree. That began in 2012, if you remember properly. By the time he took over, 11 people had been brutally murdered by a group calling themselves Electus Per Deus. And he is joining us on the line right now. Ben, it's so nice to see you. Thank you for making time for us today. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
So, Ben, I gave a bit of an introduction there, but I mean, that's only really scratching the surface. You are probably one of our best investigators when it comes to all of this stuff. You've written a book now about this. You've featured in this TV show, which is a huge hit. Are you like our celebrity investigator in South Africa?
No, I'm not a celebrity, for sure not. I'm just a policeman that did my work to the best of my knowledge. And it drives me to put criminals behind bars.
How did your story start? And I don't want you to give away the whole story in your book, because I do want people to go and get the book and read it for themselves. But give us a basic idea of where you come from and what kind of a life you grew up with and how you got into the world of fighting crime.
Yeah, I grew up on the mines. My father was a mine worker, so I was in 14 schools during my school career.
Sure.
And some schools I worked twice. And eventually I got fed up and I left school in Standard 9 and then became a cop. And I went to the police college, came back and was in the riot units. And eventually I went to the reaction unit that's fighting riots as well as terrorism. And then I became a detective because it was my passion to investigate crime.
Now, Simpiwe, who's listening in on this, is a big fan of these true crime and investigation shows. And she, I think there's a part of Simpiwe that wants to be a detective too. How difficult is it to become a detective, Ben?
You know what? It's not difficult. You must be very... know the You need to, if you get to hear something, you need to go and pursue that, what you hear, and find the truth. And you must be open-minded. You must, it must not be like you've got tunnel vision to be a detective. Yeah, it's not easy, but I think most of the people that are good detectives eventually was not born like that. And then with your qualifications and with experience, you became better and better every day.
What do you think the personality of a good detective should be? You're always curious. As you say, you've got to be open-minded. You've got to pay attention to all of the information. You've really got to have your wits about you, because you've got to be looking for clues everywhere. But is there a kind of personality that is specifically suited to this? Is it the quieter people? Is it the louder people? Is it the people who like people? Or is it the people who like to be on their own?
Yeah, I will not know about other detectives, but I'm a person that likes to work on my own, make my own decisions. But also, all the information that you get, you need to investigate everything. If it sounds so stupid, you must not chuck it away. You need to investigate everything that you hear and get as far as possible all the evidence. Like an example, you know, your truth and the real truth will not be the same. You will say that, like in this case, I've got a guy that said he saw an R1 sniper rifle. And eventually, when I got the rifle, it was a 303 rifle that was modified to look like an R1 sniper rifle. So he told the truth, but it was not factual truth, if you can understand what I'm saying.
So you sometimes have to read into what other people mean, because they might not be articulating it properly, or they might be actually trying to disguise something, or they just aren't paying attention to the facts like you are. So Simpiwe, I mean, is this something that fascinates you because you watch these TV shows, or do you watch these TV shows because you're fascinated by it?
I think it's a bit of both, because I love... because all these shows start with the crime scene. And I love how they start taking away and understanding that, oh my gosh, this blood spatter that was on this wall, this is what happened. And it was, you know, the gunshot was at 75 degrees. And they're able to kind of tell you the story of how they got there. And I'd love to know, Ben, is like, what are your current thoughts on the current state of police in South Africa? Because when I watch all these SWAT and crime shows, I'm like, oh, you need to do like a gun residue thing. And then in SA, it seems like that's not done.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, but you must always remember movies is not real life. But the problem in our country, I think at the moment, is experience. Most of the experienced people in the forensic, ballistic, and in those areas left the police. There's new young ones working there, and then there's a few old ones working there. But it is difficult if you send somebody out to a crime scene from ballistics. You need to inform him what he must look for, and then out of his own experience, he also will look for other stuff. But I think the biggest thing in South Africa currently is lack of experience. Because also, you know, people get promoted wrongly currently. You're working maybe at the station, or you're working as a court ordinance, or you're working in the cells, and there comes an officer's post in the detectives, and you apply for it and you get the officer's post, and suddenly you've got constable sergeants and warrant officers underneath you that you must guide. But you yourself doesn't even know what the inside of a docket look like. So yeah, that is the other main problem. People is not getting promoted in their fields.
I like how you brought up the dockets, because I'd love to ask also these missing dockets that we keep hearing about, and that we keep like, you know, it seems like that's like our thing. Like there's a docket created today, and then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it's gone. How does that happen in the police academy or like the police stations? Like, how does a docket go missing?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, that is... Yeah, a docket is a thing that they open when you go and later complain, you've been assaulted or been robbed or whatever. They will open a criminal docket and they will take your statement and put it inside there, and then the investigation will start inside of that docket. But it's supposed to be scanned in the charge office before it is sent to the detective branch. And in that, the detective branch also, everything that you did on the docket or do on the docket, it needs to be scanned into a scanner. And at this stage, that is not happening a lot because people that is appointed to do that is doing other work in the police. They're not doing what they've been appointed to. Yeah, and then, you know, you get corrupt policemen that sells the dockets. You get corrupt court officials that sells the dockets, prosecutors that tuck the dockets away, you know, everywhere. When people are working in this corrupt element, stuff will disappear.
There's some interesting comments here. I mean, Copperhead says, we need more good cops like Ben. I watched Devilsdorp and I was in awe of his commitment. Really didn't know we had top caliber cops like him. Well, you don't work. Are you still in the police force now? I mean, what's the story there, Ben? Because a lot of people, as you say, have gone into private practice. You mentioned ballistics and forensics and how that's not what it once used to be. But is being in the police still a real career option for people like you who want to do the right thing, who want to find the bad guys, who want to see justice done? Or has it become very difficult to be a good cop? You mentioned there are corrupt cops. We often talk about it on the show. Is that so bad at the moment that it makes it difficult for a good cop to do their job?
Yeah, your first question, Jeff, I'm not in the police anymore because if you're 60, then you go on pension.
Right.
They don't want you there. My last day, I went to court and came from court, and that was my last day. I didn't even get a handshake from anybody. But I think, you know, if you want to be a cop and you want to be a good cop, there's still place for you in the South African police force. The biggest problem is you must just stay away from politics and stuff like that. You must not interfere, let politics and people interfere in your investigations. And yeah, you know, the problem is also in New South Africa, policemen doesn't get vetted like in the old days. You know, in the old days, when I became a policeman, they look into your parents' history and your grandparents' history. And right. If you want to get married, you need to inform them 3 months before that, and I look into your wife's history. That doesn't take place anymore. So the criminals are sending their children to the police to get inside information about when they're going to be bussed and stuff like that. So that's a big problem.
That's amazing. I didn't know that they did all this background stuff on wives in the old days and family members. Ben, before we move on from Devilsdorp, because really that's the reason so many people know your name, what was it like doing that case, and what were the hardest parts of putting the pieces together in that case? I mean, you touch on this in your book on the Devil's Trail, but tell us a little bit about it from the point of view of being the guy who's trying to make this happen. Whether or not it was as terrifying for you as they seem to portray in the documentary, what your own feelings were on this, whether you got any help from anybody, what was the toughest part of this?
Yeah, you know, this is my normal. You know, people got normal, like you're on the radio the whole time, so this is your normal. People will think it's difficult for you, but it's not difficult for you. So it was not difficult for me to investigate the case. The biggest problem was at the stage when I investigated this case, I didn't get backup from the South African police or the Hawks. I was actually still in the Hawks at that stage. I had to use my private vehicle sometimes. My wife had to arrange vehicles for me. Brigadier Victor, who appointed me in the investigation, in the beginning gave me a vehicle, but then he left back to crime intelligence. And you know, all crime intelligence vehicles are not registered actually on the police system. So I can't as a policeman drive with those vehicles. So I was out of vehicles and I didn't get much backup from the police. And every time I need to serve 252 subpoenas, because every time the court case went forward, I had to serve 252 subpoenas. I had to do it on my own. But it was my choice to do it like that. And Yeah, if I must do it again like this, I will do it again like this. It's not a problem for me.
But Ben, you're dealing with some pretty dangerous people here, and those of us who've seen this documentary, and even more those of us who read the book, this Cecilia Stein is terrifying. When was the first time you encountered her?
Yeah, she's terrifying on looks, but if you actually sit down with her and speak to her, you can see she's actually just a bullshitter, 100% the best bullshitter that you can get.
Yeah.
But the first time I spoke to her is when I didn't arrest him myself. I got warrants of arrest for him, and I sent Colonel Kruger,
Yeah.
Gert Kruger, and his team to go and arrest her in Marinda. And the first time I saw her was at the police station when she came in with a big cylinder because she needed sieved of oxygen.
Yeah.
And and then I was sitting down with her and I spoke to her and I say something like, you know, Cecilia, that Zach had sex with his wife before she died. And then for the first time and the only time, I saw the real Cecilia coming out. Her eyes was, it's like fire, you know. If she could have attacked me then and stabbed me to death, then I think she would have done it. But she's herself, she's not a killer, but she can get people, take people's mind and get them to kill people. And that's the biggest problem now with her in jail, because she took normal people from the street and made them killers. What is she going to do with people inside the prison? And she still hates me, and she had a hit on my child, she had a hit on me.
Wow.
And people do stupid stuff at the end of the day. So you must, for the rest of your life, look over your shoulder and see, be alert.
This is the thing that always gets me about you guys in the police force, is that you have to look out for your own safety and the safety of your family the whole time. So you're just doing your job. You said it just now yourself. This is just your day-to-day job. You're trying to find information. You're trying to issue arrest warrants. You're trying to get statements from people, investigate things, and then someone wants to kill you. How much of all of that we hear about in the news is actually true? And do you guys get any support at all when it comes to the, you know, the SAPs? Do they give you a psychologist? Do they ever offer you personal protection, or are you totally on your own?
Yeah, you can speak to a psychologist. There is a psychologist in the police force, but that's also a difficult thing, that is a whole thing on its own that you can speak about. But otherwise, backup, you will not get backup from the police. Even in high cases, like that colonel that was killing the Cape, everybody knew what he was investigating, and they gave him protection and his family protection in the beginning, and then they took it away and he was killed. And then after that, also his family is not getting any protection anymore. So yeah, we are not enough policemen in the South African Police Service, to protect each other also. Like I've told the people the other day, we are easily saying that the police is not doing their jobs. But if you take, we are 180,000 policemen in the police force, where there is 40,000 workers in the office, private people working for the police.
Right.
Then you get your special units, your court units, your cell units, your riot units, and all those. If you take them all away, I think there will be maybe 45,000 policemen. That's actually thinking that crime is not committed, because the
Jeez.
detective is investigating crime that was already committed. So, and then if you take that 45,000 policemen and you divide them into three shifts, what is over? 17,000, 16,000 policemen in the whole of the country that needs to look after the country. And that is actually mind-boggling that the government wants to reduce policemen. And they must pick up policemen. They must get more policemen on the streets. In New York, in every block of the center, there's police officers.
Yeah.
In South Africa, you will suffer to get a police officer on the street, see a police officer on the street.
Yeah, it's
a big problem.
It's less than a half a percentage point. It's 0.3% police. So, you know, per population. So that would mean that, you know, in every 100 people, we have less than one policeman. And I'm sure that many of those 100 people are criminals. So just to go back quickly to Devil's Daughter, this is the case that made you famous. Have you ever seen anything or been involved in a case that was as crazy as that one in all your years as a cop? Or was that just the one that got the most attention because the media picked up on it?
Yeah, that was the one who got the most attention. And because it was a white family with white friends killing their friends and their friends' friends.
Right.
And also killing people that they knew from before. But no, it's not my first strange case. You know, I also investigated policemen that were Satanists and a policeman that killed another policeman also for the devil's sake. So yeah, it's more strange being a cop in South Africa.
Is there a lot of this stuff going on? Because again, you know, the Satanist angle makes it sensational, right? I mean, people immediately pay attention when there's some kind of Satanist thing because it sounds so much darker and more dangerous. Is this a big deal in South Africa, or is this also something that people have just played up because it gets media clicks?
Yeah, I think people played it up also, but there is a lot of Satanists in South Africa, you know, making whatever they are doing, but they're not big criminals because Satanism isn't a crime. So, and I think that was the problem in the 2012 killings, is policemen were looking after the Satanism investigation. That was, it's actually stupid, because you're only supposed to invest the crime. The extra evidence that you get, you must gather it, but you must not look only at the Satanism part. And eventually, in this case, only the Cecilia was a Satanist, or so-called Satanist. She convinced the other people to kill the people in the name of Christ.
Right.
So they were actually a Christian cult and not a devil's cult.
It's unbelievable, but obviously the devil part of it is what got people's attention. So what are the most disturbing things you've seen in your years as a cop? What are the things that, because you guys have to be like cast iron, you can't get upset, you can't be afraid, you have to go into places where you see some very disturbing things. What's the worst stuff you've seen and the stuff that upset you the most, Ben?
Yeah, you know, in the 80s, it was the riots in the townships, the way they were killing their own people, you know, burning them alive, necklacing them, hanging up with wires through their throats and stuff like that. And then, yeah, eventually in the detectives, it's more that children that commit suicide. That is difficult to look at and to investigate. You know, a child of standard 7 blowing his head away with a double barrel shotgun. Yeah, and then your normal murders and then also your farm murders where people is getting, mutilated.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, that is also difficult to come on a farm and you see an old bunny or old woman, and even the blacks were working on the farm getting mutilated because they're working for a white person. Now that's some of the difficult stuff that you need to go through as a cop, and you need to stay sane. That's the biggest problem, to stay sane.
What do you reckon, like, for all of us listening now, hopefully we never have to encounter a Satanist cult or a bunch of people as crazy as this Cecilia Steyn. But what do you think the biggest danger is to the average South African? What do we need to pay attention to? What are we not observant enough about? And where should we be looking out for ourselves?
You know, I think most of the South Africans is observant enough, but they don't want to get involved. You know, if you see videos that people post on Facebook of crime being committed right in front of them, And at the end of the day, if the police go to the crime scene and they ask for witnesses, nobody comes forward because people are too scared to come forward. And and I think also the cell phone is one of the biggest problems because people.
Sorry, Ben, we lost you for a second there. Sorry. Hello?
Yeah, sorry, somebody's trying to phone me the whole time.
No problem. You said the cell phone as a weapon? I mean, because
No, not really as a weapon. You know, women and men that are on their phones doesn't look around. They get robbed very easily. Women coming out of shopping centers, they're on the phone with their bags in the hand, put it next to their car, staying on the phone, trying to get the car keys. Eventually, the criminals just walk up to them, take the keys from them, get in the car and drive off. And then they jump up and down. Where's the police? Why didn't the police here to protect us? But it's not. We're not a security firm. people need to look at their own security.
That's true.
And if something happens, we will assist and try to catch the criminals. But and then also on cell phones, you know, in the old days, well, not in the old days, a few years ago, we could have pinged a phone if there was a killing and stuff. We can ping a phone and try to catch the criminals. But after the killing of that colonel in the Cape, that is also not allowed anymore, you know. That is difficult because we are now playing in the hands of the criminals by not using access to phones anymore because of stupid people that sells this information.
That's crazy. I mean,
it's difficult to be a cop today.
You'd think about with all this FICA and RICA and all this stuff we have to do that people would be, you could track them down and the police could use that information to find people, but maybe with corrupt policemen, it's actually not a bad thing that they can't. I mean, the corrupt ones don't care. They don't care about what the rules are. They break the rules. Simpiwe, you want to ask some questions? I know this is your favorite area of expertise.
Yes. I'd like to, Ben, you said that you've retired now. And I'd like to know how life is for you as a retired policeman. And now you're just an ordinary citizen in South Africa.
Yeah, I don't want to retire. I don't look 61 anyway. I know my beard is getting gray, but you know, I'm still young. I can work till I'm 70, and you know, I should think that the police should work till 65, and the last 5 years of your police career, they must send you to train people and put your expertise into people. I can't, when I, you know, that wasn't the only case that I investigated in my life 5 years. I had other cases that I needed to investigate. So I could never train people or assist people to be better cops because of my own workload. But I think the police should let policemen stay till 65. If they want to, and then say, okay, you're a detective, go to detective training and train detectives. But also, I don't want to be a private investigator. It is difficult for me that I need to take somebody's money to investigate a crime that the police should do because they earn a salary and the government is supposed to assist people. Now that the government doesn't assist people and people come to me, you won't believe how many phone calls I get every day. And on Facebook, people looking for me to assist in murders of their family members and stuff. And the thing is, I can't take that. And then I need to take the money. I will not do that. And another thing is, if I identify the perpetrators, I can't go and arrest them. I can't see that they go to court and see the case through court. I need to give that information back to the police. And what is the police going to do with that information? What is the court going to do with that information? And then at the end of the day, you are going to look me in the eyes and say, oh, I paid you $100,000 or whatever to get my son's killer to go to jail and nothing is happening. And I don't want that burden on myself. Because it's out of my hands, so I'm not interested in doing that.
It sounds sounds really tough, Ben. I was going to say just now, we're so lucky that we've had cops like you in the system and people who are able to solve these crimes and people who are genuinely motivated by a sense of justice. Did you feel good after writing the book? I mean, telling your story, getting it out there, explaining to people what information they might not have known, because there's a lot of extra information in the book that wasn't in Devil's Dorp, right?
Yeah, you know, it was an honor for me that the publisher contacted me and said, listen, I knew you wrote the book with Jana Marx about the killings and Devil Dorp was there, but we need to tell your story.
Yes.
So I didn't want to do it in the beginning, but my wife said, no, man, go and do it. So it was a privilege for me. And I also need to close some stuff in my personal life that was bothering me the whole time. And, you know, I needed to close this case also in a matter of, you know, I don't know how to say it, but it's more difficult for me, but
it
was an honor.
I think it's incredible. Listen, I mean, congratulations on the book. Really, I would encourage anybody to read it. It's called On the Devil's Trail, How I Hunted Down the Krugersdorp Killers. And that's the case that will make you famous. But there are so many other things that you've been doing over the years that I really just want to say, because South African police get such a tough rap from the public. It's great to know that somewhere in the police there are people like you, fewer and fewer, I'm afraid, but there are people like you who are trying their damnedest to solve crimes, to do the best they can. I really appreciate it. And from all of us in the public who feel like we've been let down so much of the time, it's really great to hear from somebody who does the best they can at every opportunity. And even though they didn't give you a handshake on your last day as a policeman, and even though you didn't get any thanks from anybody for your years of service, just know that there are lots of us out there who really do appreciate the kind of work you do.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Gareth.
It's great to have you on the show, Ben, and I hope we'll speak to you again soon. Keep trying to solve these crimes. I don't think you should be retired. I think you should be someone who we can call up and who we can put to use. And I think any smart, sensible police commissioner, anybody who would be paying attention to the needs of this country as opposed to the needs of the politicians, would know that someone like you is an absolute dead cert to be put to work again. I mean, as you say, you're not old. You've got lots of energy. You've got all the motivation to keep doing this. Simpiwe, let's get more people like this out on the road doing the things.
Yes, yes, and yes.
100%. Listen, thank you so much. Ben, have an awesome day, and thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time. The book is called On the Devil's Trail, How I Hunted Down the Krugersdorp Killers, and it is available both online and in good bookstores now. That's an awesome thing to follow up on and to read if you're interested in this story, among other things. All right, thanks so much for the show this morning, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Oh, no, we won't. Tomorrow's a holiday. Tomorrow is a public holiday. So everybody enjoy the public holiday, including Ben. We will see you on Friday morning, bright and early at 6 o'clock. Cheers, everybody. Be good. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com